You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the first BWI Live of spring practice. It's here. We're talking about football that we saw, things that actually happened. That's coming up on today's show. As a quick reminder, we're very active yesterday with all kinds of different conversations, highlights, videos, press conferences. You can check it out all here on the Blue White Illustrated YouTube channel. We've got all of it for you. We are going to be discussing all that stuff. So think of this as the buffet option. You're going to get a little bit of everything, but if you want to dive in and get the full entree and listen to all of James Franklin's comments, we've got that video for you here on the YouTube channel. Check it out after we're done talking about it. Some of those things in context will maybe make a little bit more sense. Our experts, veterans in Penn State football reporting who have been around for a while now, Nate Bauer was out at practice yesterday, heard James Franklin say words into a microphone. Nate, how are you doing today? Big picture thing, that number one thing that sticks out to you about yesterday.
Oh, wow. That's a lot of pressure. I'm well. Thank you for asking.
Was that the hard one? Was that the hard question?
No, you know, it's a pretty standard response from me. Yeah. What was the number one thing yesterday? I thought that, and it's going to demand your insight, I would say, But, you know, this conversation about humility in the coach's room, right? In terms of going through this painstaking process with the other assistants and specifically the coordinators, Tom Allen being willing to not do everything he did at Indiana, Andy Kotelnicki being willing to not do, right? And so just going through the list, Justin Lustig, obviously at Vanderbilt, interesting.
The funny thing is, like, when we saw the 10 minutes we saw of practice, and then I saw some of the drills they're running, I'm like, oh, they're going to be doing more than I was expecting. Based on like two drills, they're going to be doing a lot more in the run game than I was expecting. I think that some of those things, we had that conversation yesterday, and then we got to see practice, and it's like, oh, there's a new layer of context there, at least for me in that situation. Some of the things that that I was surprised by. Fitz, good morning. Hope you're having a wonderful start today. As a heads up, you got your mic muted. What was something that stood out to you from practice yesterday that you thought was interesting over on the defensive side? I'm excited to hear, by the way, because I never get a chance to see the defense.
What's funny is nobody's excited to hear about it because everyone's so focused on the offense. I drew the short straw. I actually went through James Franklin's transcript yesterday and looking for, like, trying to find defensive stuff. It's like, hey, how are the receivers? How's Andy working with Drew? How's Andy going to get the most out of Drew? Everything like that. So I kind of get the leftovers here. The leftovers happens to be a top 10 defense in the country. They're going to be good again. There's some retooling to do. But it's just so funny how, like, you know, you can kind of tone this out because you expect the defense to be good. It's got a new face in front of it with Tom Allen, of course. So he's still adjusting, but that's where I spent my time yesterday, entertaining stuff from a sense that, like, you just kind of take it for granted, right? Like, this is kind of how we feel about this Penn State defense now after the last couple of years, regardless of who's calling it. I think it's going to be another good group. And, you know, I feel a lot safer saying that on the defensive side of the ball. So, and also thank you for checking to see how I was this morning. I know Nate didn't get the same courtesy, so I appreciate you. Appreciate you asking.
I railroaded right over it. I said, how are you doing? And then I asked a separate question. They used to bother me all the time. When I was a kid, my mom would ask me four separate questions. It would short circuit my brain. She's like, why won't you answer me? I was like, well, you asked me four things.
Yeah.
And I just did that to Nate. So
Well, that's one of the funnier things of when James has his press conference is like, hey, how are you doing? And they just like somebody completely glosses over it and then he gives them shit. It's kind of great. But no, we're doing well. We're doing well. Thank you for asking. But no, Penn State's open practice is great. Dude, 60 degrees yesterday. I know Nate's going to play golf today without me. It's a wonderful week in Happy Valley to start playing football.
Michael Cincini is in the chat. He says, nailed it. Humility and compromise conversation was disturbing. And by the way, he was here yesterday on the live show and donated to the channel. I just want to say thank you for being here and ready for spring football. Thank you for your donation today and yesterday. Those things don't go unnoticed. Michael McCollum also here yesterday on the show where, you know, we're flipping things around. The recorded show that's usually on Wednesday, we flip those things. So I want to make sure everyone who is participating in the channel gets an opportunity to get their shine on the show, including coming up, Fitz, I'm excited for you to see this. The first time you'll be here for YouTube Comment Theater, which is coming up later in the show. So that's exciting stuff. But I'm excited about everything. Like, I just genuinely have a lust and a joy for these things. But we've got some pretty awesome local partners that we get to deal with on a regular basis. And if you love sports, hello, you're here on the Blue White Illustrated YouTube show at 10 a.m. on a Wednesday. You love sports. You probably have an interest in cards as well because, you know, trading cards, sports cards are making a huge comeback. And there's now officially a card shop in State College owned by a great dude that I know all of us here on the show know and respect, a local person who I think a lot of people in town know, Jason Dombach, the owner of Nittany Cards Plus. It's the only dedicated sports trading card and collectible shop in State College. It's located at 1631 South Atherton Street. So if you're used to coming to State College and you only know downtown, just get on Atherton, you know that street, and you go south. And it's by a PNC across from the CVS. If you're in town, you know where that location is. They've got all kinds of great stuff you can see here on the YouTube channel. They've got Penn State football cards, Drew Aller cards, rookie cards from Penn Staters that have gone on to the NFL, Micah Parsons, Parker Washington, Jahan Dotson. You can get all these cards. The Bowman series in college, Tops, Panini, Upper Deck. They also have the Chrome University football products featuring some of your favorite Penn State football stars and other top names in college. They actively buy and trade individual sealed trading cards and signed memorabilia. So if you check out the description of this video, you'll see their eBay page, but just go in and say hi to JD. Go to Nittany Cards Plus and bring your cards. And even if you're not going to trade them, they have the sleeves and they have organization tools so that you can make sure that your stuff stays in pristine condition and you can display it in a way that you are proud of. Nittany Cards Plus, 1631 South Atherton Street in State College, or give them a call, 814-954-7488. Thanks again to Jason and Nittany Cards Plus for being a sponsor here on the show. Last thing I got here from my stump speech is, it is the start of spring football. And I've noticed this from Penn State fans that there's a sleepy start to this process where maybe by like 2 weeks before the spring game, everyone shows up like, oh, spring football starts now. So if you've got a friend who's a fan of Penn State football, let them know. We're talking about the real stuff right now here in March so that they're here and they're plugged into stuff and ready to go. And of course, the best way to do that is subscribe to Blue White Illustrated. 2 months for a dollar. Use code PSU1 and you get an extra month to try out the site to get that inside information from these two here.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
One of the things that you get there for premium content purposes is offensive and defensive notes. Nate, the vibes. We're always talking about the vibes at practice.
Sure.
Thought of what the offense was doing and the tone to start yesterday. What was it?
Yeah. Let's be honest and forthcoming about this. It's tough to get a vibe in 10 minutes. And yet Andy Kotelnicki made his presence well known with a big crowd of cameras around him right for that first opportunity at practice. He called somebody out. It appeared to be a lowly, poor, straggling walk-on, right? Like that was kind of pulling up the rear of running over to a drill. And he literally made the kid run back. Right.
I think it was Jack Lambert, one of the walk-on quarterbacks.
One of the best of all time forced into anyway. So yeah. That was interesting. It was what you would expect. Look, there's a couple of things that are interesting that I'm not sure other people will care about as much as me or as I do, which is Jaywan Sider is hobbled.
Yeah.
Our guy there, the running backs coach for Penn State, is coming off of surgery this offseason. He had a couple of knee procedures. And basically he's in a jazzy, right? He's on a jazzy kind of rolling around there at practice, but it's not nothing. Right? Like he's going to be checking out things and maybe ceding some of those responsibilities in terms of his activity as a coach during practice. You know, beyond that, you got to see Phil Troutwine working with the offensive line. I did think one thing, and T Frank, you can correct me, or Fitz, you can correct me. They had two lines of right. So they for the first time, I don't remember seeing this in the past that they had quarterbacks going at each other, right? Like they had a pair of quarterbacks
yeah.
with lines running basically into each other of receivers.
Are you talking about during passing drills?
Yes.
Yeah. So they've done that previously. The way they split it up during this particular camp was a little different, where they normally have the two deep quarterbacks on one side. So Aller and Perbula would be on one side, and then the walk-ons and some of the depth guys, young players, would be on the other side. So we tend to focus only on those players, but this past, what they were doing yesterday is they split it up a little more evenly so that you had one with four and two with three, if you think of it from a depth chart perspective. The thing that was different and the thing that I found super interesting, you might have seen there in the spring practice highlight cut that I put on the YouTube channel. Another great reason, if you listen to the podcast, I try to do things here on the YouTube channel for you to kind of give you a little more context. The first time I've seen the quarterbacks go through ball security drills with the skill players, I haven't seen that before. So if you're wondering how is Penn State going to get more out of the running game and the quarterbacks and all those things, you know, if you have your quarterbacks going through tackle breaking drills, you know, to me, that says a lot about the tone they're setting and what they want from the quarterbacks, and not just Bo Prabula, not just a guy who is a runner, but every quarterback that is on the roster, what's going to be expected of them this year. So that was something that we did not see previously, and I think it's an interesting change, and I think it's more of a tone-setting change, a mentality change for the offense. Fitz, on the defensive side, everyone wants to know about Abdul Carter. So tell us what you saw from him playing defensive end.
I was going to say, with the mentality change, it does not change on the defense. It's basically like you could cut and paste last year's practice, even though Tom Allen, not as vocal, I guess I would say, as Manny Diaz. But you saw a lot of the same stuff. The exception, of course, Abdul Carter moving over to defensive end. It's very funny when you take a look at last year. He's there with the linebackers, and he is massive. I mean, he's 6'3", plus 250. He is so much bigger than everyone. Like Tamir Robbins is a big dude, and Tamir was just like the second biggest dude out there. So you move him to defensive end, and all of a sudden you've got Amin Vanover. You've got Zariah Fisher, who was pretty active yesterday. You've got Jameel Lyons, who is going to be very active at some point. So he kind of blends in a little bit more with the crowd. Then he moves around, and he moves around really well, because that's what he does. You know, taking what we could take from the 15 minutes or so that we were there yesterday, there's really not much to say. They did some of their typical ball turnover drills and things like that. So there really wasn't much to take. Did see him go up, you know, put an arm around a freshman, guide him in the right direction. So I think that's a a growth point for Abdul, and certainly something that he can continue to prove upon. I know Nate's working on a story that's kind of like moving in that direction as well. So, but there's not a lot to take away from yesterday. I think that the biggest thing that I talk about with Carter coming out of yesterday is James Franklin said at his press conference that they feel good about where they're at with depth at linebacker. And I'm just kind of sitting there and I'm like, there's bodies out there. There's scholarship guys out there, but it obviously takes a hit with taking Carter out of there. You've got your frontline guys, of course, Kobe King, going to be a big time player, going to be a captain, Tony Rojas beside him, Dom DeLuca. And then where do you go from there? That's a good question, because Kevion Keyes, we've heard great things about him, but he's never played before. Keon Wiley is a guy that I'm looking at as, is this the guy that's really ready to take the step? Is this the guy that, you know, and he may not be a starter, but he has versatility. He's played probably all three positions. They had him running around on the field side a little bit yesterday. But he's versatile. He's rushed the passer very well. Is this the guy that they need, or that can take that step to provide them with that depth that they think they have? Because right now, you know, you don't have a ton of, I mean, you've got Kobe coming back, but you don't have a ton of actual production as a starter coming back. You lose Jacobs, you lose Carter. So it's just one of those questions that I have, that they say they feel good about it. I know Abdul wanted to make this move, but they, you know, there might be some questions there.
Yeah. And that's actually something that I was hoping we could have a conversation of when I've been writing and previewing spring football and we talk about the linebacker competition. I think the buzz for Kevion Keyes is a guy who has emerged, did good things. And we both talked to him during the winter media availability, and he explained how much he used his freshman redshirt to prepare him for this year. But I'm always leery to overlook a veteran, and Keon Wiley's been on the roster a while, and I would imagine he's going to be a part of this conversation more than we've really been giving him the ink for so far, or, you know, on the internet, message boards, conversation. I think we need to make sure he's a part of this conversation, and that sounds like what you saw, you know, just it's not just going to be pass over that guy for the next guy that you feel like has talent and size. He's a guy that it sounds like you think is going to be a part of this conversation.
Yeah, and because you look at the offseason chatter, and it's either talking about how Tony Rojas can be a dude, or it's you bring up Tyler Elston and then get shouted down because everybody wants to kick him off the team or whatever. Yeah. But no, Wiley is just a guy that's like, hey, he can move into that upper echelon. You know, you need five linebackers. You need six linebackers to go. And he can move into that this year. And I think that's the guy, you know, if you're taking a look, you know, particularly under the microscope, that Wiley's an important piece of this. Like, and I'm not sure how often they roll out with three linebacker sets, but if you have a guy that can play all three spots, that's very valuable. And I think Wiley is sort of a guy that could move into that role. The issue that you have here was when you're talking about linebackers, you're talking about a proven guy in Kobe, and you pretty much know what you have in Dom DeLuca there as well. But Rojas, a lot of potential. Wiley's potential. Keyes is potential. So potential is one thing, but still haven't done anything yet. So that's right. That's kind of how you keep going back to that. So I question, you know, I think it's going to be something that we question until the season, and then they're going to go out and roll out two linebackers and play a third safety. So that's right. That's basically what I'm thinking here with linebacker. But I think it's a spot where you're talking defense and you're splitting hairs, because you know that defense can be really good again. Should be the same at defensive tackle. I mean, the same names, but, you know, likely get better. You know, players get better sometimes. Defensive end should be a menace. And then safety should be really good too. You got to figure out corner. You got to figure out linebacker, which is kind of what we expected coming into the spring.
Yeah, it sounds like we know where Kobe King is going to play. We know where Dom DeLuca is going to play. And everything else is fair game. And that's what the spring is for, is to figure out those positional fits, who does what best, and how you're going to get the short yardage defense on the field. You know, as Fitz said, when you're going to be running a 4-2 anyway, like these sub packages you're going to play against certain teams, you want to have them. But really, we've been talking about what's going on, and what James Franklin even talked about yesterday during his press conference, leading us in a certain direction. And that's what we're going to go to next. James Franklin spoke at noon. We're rewinding the clock all the way to about 24 hours ago to discuss James Franklin's roughly 40 minutes of conversation, which Nate and I covered the highlights yesterday. So Fitz, I'm coming back to you to start this conversation in what you found illuminating, what you found interesting, and your major takeaways from what Franklin had to say when he was talking at noon to kick all of this off on Tuesday.
Well, we'll start where he started with, well, I guess he started with an opening statement, but Abdul Carter was the first question, and we talked about that a little bit. I think it was interesting that he was pretty forthcoming in that, hey, Abdul and his dad, they wanted to move to defensive end because that's where they think he's best at. And that's something we've talked about on Blue Whales Illustrated since basically since the end of the Peach Bowl. But I just thought that was a little bit illuminating, is that, hey, they made this move for the benefit of the player because that's what the player wanted. And he says they feel good about linebacker. We just talked about that a second ago, but like they're kind of leaving it not high and dry, but they're kind of leaving it a little bit more open than they probably would prefer. So that is one thing that jumped out to me. Of course, we talked, on the site yesterday about Drew Shelton. Nate had a piece last week mentioning Shelton was going to be certainly limited coming off that offseason surgery. So you've got opportunity there. I mean, that's kind of the look at what you get with the other tackles. JB Nelson's going to play some tackle. Javen Williams is going to be out there. Chimney Ono, I think, is an interesting guy. Like I don't think he's going to be ready, but I think he can be a guy eventually that can be a player here. So it'll be interesting to see that. Nolan Rucci, of course, as well. So right off the bat, I guess we'll go in chronological order here, but right off the bat, the Abdul Carter stuff was interesting to me. And then, of course, how are you going to make an offensive line work when you don't have two tackles for the spring?
Yeah. Yeah. This was, as Fitz kind of highlighted there, I felt like the biggest winner from James Franklin's press conference was the Blue White Illustrated coverage. You guys have been on top of all of this stuff in the offseason. There were times I was like, is he reading our stuff? You know, like these are things that we've talked about, that some of the concepts and things that we've put in, there was a lot of stuff that if you follow the site, you already heard about. Nate, following our conversation yesterday, which I always encourage people to go check out, but we can have it again here. What stands out to you that you want to address right now?
Yeah, the conversation, I think, about what Andy Kotelnicki can do to help Drew Aller, right? And some of the specifics that Franklin brought up about explosive plays and defending the entirety of the field. Again, more your lane than mine, talking about stacks and bunches, quote unquote. Right. But I found kind of an intriguing, right? He's like, Franklin's pushing this narrative of, okay, the last two games, Penn State's explosive playmaking just was off the charts compared to the rest of the season, which is true. I mean, they had more of them, but Michigan State was not good.
It's not a good.
Like, that wasn't not a good team, not a good defense, right? And Ole Miss.
Fun Friday night, though.
A fun Friday night. Sure. Yeah. I think, I liked it from my couch. Like Michigan State wasn't a great team, and Ole Miss is kind of interesting to reflect on, in the sense that a decent number of those chunk plays that Penn State had were, I don't know if I would call them garbage time, but I mean, it wasn't exactly a competitive game, right? Going into the fourth.
If you're thinking specifically of passing ones, I would agree, but they were able to rip off some good runs in the first half where they were able to push guys off the line of scrimmage and create explosives in the run game. But yeah, the passing game, kind of like the other two big games in the year, was very slow to get out of the starting blocks. And then when you had to hit bleep it, then they started throwing the football a little more aggressively. So
yeah,
I agree with you there.
I'm not dismissing it, right? I'm not saying that that there weren't improvements that were made, but when one of your chunk plays is Tyler Warren catching a tipped ball with one hand behind, right? Like for a 75-yard touchdown, it's hard to look at that and see it as a schematic indicator of future success, right? By duplicating that or replicating that for the future, that will lead to the same types of plays. Right. I mean, you just can't count on that kind of stuff. So yeah. I don't know. I think very clearly, James Franklin, the Penn State coaching staff, have identified things from last season that I think they're balancing who took responsibility for them in a certain respect, right? Drew Aller was a whipping boy of sorts for those specific games, as were the receivers. And so the two elements that he pointed out yesterday that I thought were intriguing were, hey, there are things that can be done, things that have to be done to aid the production of both of those groups, right? The passing game is not, was not being helped in addition to their performances by what Penn State was doing schematically. So,
yeah,
right.
I guess the conversation around that I find interesting when you look at the film, and James Franklin talked about this of we don't care about showing things in spring football because everyone can go watch the film and then they run the most vanilla things ever in the spring game. Like I know what he's saying of we're still going to play a game and you're still going to see us run cover two and we're going to run certain passing concepts. But the point he was talking about, I think that's interesting, is you watch the way, and this is something I picked up from practice last year at the end, was he, especially Franklin, was very dialed into adding in motion and adding in motion at the snap for receivers and how he wanted guys to come off the line of scrimmage and where he wanted them at the snap to give them those advantages. You know, the quote you have here on the pages, you know, against man coverage. Andy Cole, Nicky does that stuff on steroids. So like they had to find a way at the end of the year to implement and add in some of these things within the structure of what they already had. Now they're building a structure that has way more of that fits.
Absolutely. I mean, this is the whole reason for the change, right? Because that you put those guys in motion, you do all these things to move around, you do all these things for the sake of, hey, maybe you don't have the smoothest group out there, but you have athletes that can run. Like I think he said it, James Franklin said it yesterday, when asked about the receiver specifically, talent's not the issue. Like athleticism, not the issue. There's a lot of things that are not the issue. They just really haven't pinned down what the actual issue is and how they fix it. That's the problem. that's kind of a, you know, a little check mark in there. But excuse me, you bring in Fleming, you bring in some of those guys that you maybe get a year to, you know, progress, do what they do, get better, whatever. And maybe that helps. And then you take that on top of that with the schematic things. And I think that will help. I'm curious, like I heard it the first time and then I went back and read it and I must have heard it wrong, but James mentioned the touchdown to interception ratio. And then he doubled back and said, looking at the coverage, I don't know that it necessarily felt that way. Meaning that everybody's down on him after he was 25 to 2 last year. But like, I feel like we're right here, right? Like it's not about the 25.
That's what I said.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, I'm not going crazy here. Is that touchdown interception ratio is great, but like touchdown interception ratio or touchdown to non-touchdown ratio against Ohio State, Michigan, and Ole Miss last year was that was the thing, right? So I feel like we're talking in different circles here when we're talking about the offense.
Yeah, and that's I think an area. Some of the stuff I've been doing at the site this winter is talking about how these things that motion and shifts and all of those can help Drew Aller get some of those explosive plays and some of those touchdowns without having to do so much work. And that's going to be what we see. Like, is it actually going to work? Because whenever Fitz, I think one of the first conversations you and I had here on the channel about Andy Cole, Nicky is like, everyone loves the scheme. Everyone thinks it's creative. Nobody has any idea if it's going to work in the Big Ten. Nobody has any idea if you put this in a new conference, if these concepts will actually help elevate the passing game. That's the point, but will they?
Yeah, the second level of Big Ten defenses and the second level of Big 12 defenses, very different. Very different.
Oh my gosh, it's been funny. That's not to bring this up again, but you watch some of the things at Kansas and you go, okay, does that translate to Penn State? And then you watch the coverage and I go, I know that doesn't translate to the Big Ten because that safety does not know what he's doing. And there are ways that they play in the Big 12 that Big 10 safeties just don't do. Like they don't play aggressively downhill. They're going to keep a lid on everything. And so some of these concepts are great. And I think that even Penn State last year tried to use some of them, but there's got to be a second answer when they don't work.
And there's got to be a running threat from the quarterback. Like, yeah. I mean, that is huge for what he's done. It's huge for what James Franklin's done. It's not a huge part of Drew Aller's game. And that is, you know, that's why you're playing an extra defender. And that's, you know, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but like that makes a huge difference in what they're trying to do and what they, you know, that guy in practice is rushing, you know, is coming forward. That guy in the game is not. Like that's something you got to figure out.
Nate, I know the last thing you got here that you want to highlight is leadership. So what did he talk about with leadership, or what did you notice that you wanted to highlight here?
Just kind of a familiar talking point. He has brought it up in the past. I don't know how recently, but you know, kind of about, he speaks broadly about the this generation of football players liking and feeling comfortable with leading by example, but not necessarily doing it vocally. Right. And so I think that Fitz previewed it earlier. I'll say it again here. Like I'm writing that there's this looming question, I think. Right. And I hate the topic of leadership. I think it's stupid. Right. It's like it's an overblown thing.
Yeah.
To just, okay, well,
it's very ethereal too. You can't, right, what does it mean? Define it, or right, there's nothing you can pinpoint to be like leadership.
Right. But what I noticed, right, and again, like this is just being as fair as I can be, is James Franklin in 2023, last year at this time, opened his spring press conference talking about the year prior, 2022, as being the best leadership that he's had in 12 years as a coach, right? So his definition of what leadership is was exemplified by Sean Clifford, PJ Mustafa, and John Sutherland, effectively, yeah, right? That trio of captains. What? Wait, is it right? Like, is it the same now? Right? Can you say after last season that, right, he went into last spring talking about the need to identify and develop that leadership, yeah, within the team. And he was, you know, it was, oh, this is going to be, it might take a different shape. There might be more of them, less, right, not as strong. But I think that if you're doing an honest appraisal of who and what this team is, the stars of this team don't necessarily fit the mold at present.
Yeah. Yeah, and Fitz, this goes back to, I think, to the class of 2022, right? So the guys that are either redshirt sophomores or rising juniors who were in that five-star studded class, how many of those guys are going to arrive early in a leadership perspective or arrive on time even? And I guess like from that group, who do you think needs to be or can be doing that for the team this year on both sides?
Well, who needs to be? Nate said it, the stars, like your stars, like you look at the Michigan team that just won a national championship, like the guys that are their stars are their guys that are out in front of the program. Like, and hey, Nick's a great talker. Denai's a great talker. You've got guys that are good talkers. It's just a matter of like, hey, at some point you're gonna have to, and this is awful cliche, but grab somebody by the face mask and like be the leader.
Ah.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I do that with Nate all the time. You know, yeah, he did it yesterday during coverage. It's just like, anyway, but yeah, you look at that and you look at, you know, Penn State recruits a lot of nice kids, great kids, awesome kids. Sometimes those kids turn into leaders. Sometimes those kids wait for other people to make the leadership decisions. And that's something you got to figure out. And it starts, to be frank here, it starts at quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was just going to say, like, I just think it's knowing what your position is and what your status is within the program. Right. And so for Drew specifically and Nick and, you know, Abdul, some of these other guys, right, when you're not a senior or you're not an upperclassman, you don't have that backlog of experience to say, I've earned the right to tell old guys who are older and have more reps and so on, right, who have built up a bigger backlog, I don't have the right to tell them what to do. But it's literally that. It is telling other dudes what to do, right? Yeah. It is saying, this is the example. This is how we're going to operate. And if you're not in, you're out. And involving, and right, like there's this balance of, I don't want to say narking, but when James Franklin talked about yesterday, I want guys to be comfortable coming into my office and having honest conversations with me.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
To me, that suggests very strongly that that's not happening.
Yeah.
At present.
And I think it's also, I think it's not necessarily that, although I think that is part of it. It's also being able to have a mature conversation with the coaches of saying, hey, we don't like this. And can we have a conversation about this? And whether the coach decides to take that or not, at least they're getting feedback. At least they're getting, like, there's an honest, open conversation between a leader on the team bringing concerns up to a coach, as opposed to the coach knows best. We're not going to talk to them. We were intimidated by that. And, you know, trying to have these guys be mature adults ahead of time. Because that's the other thing is, like, you know, we're talking about Cooper Cousins as a guy who has unnatural leadership for his age because he's 18. He's a guy who is very young doing these things and acting in a way that, you know, adults don't do. A lot of adults don't act that way with their superiors or with their peers.
And you caught the surprise in Chuck Losey's voice when he said it, too. It's like, hey, we got somebody here that's about, you know, that is going to talk to a kid that's 2 years older than him and be assertive, I guess you would say. Whereas, like, on the contrary, like, Bo and Drew spent a year with Sean Clifford. Now, are they trying to be the leadership version of themselves? Or are they trying to emulate Sean Clifford? That's, like, that's sort of the identity crisis here.
Yeah. We got the mailbag that we got to get to, and there's some good questions. So I want to make sure we have enough here at the end of the show to do that. But the live show is all about interacting with you. We understand, like, we're doing this at 10 a.m. People work, people watch the show later, they watch it on replay, and some people, but based on the comments, don't watch the show at all and they just comment on the videos. But what I want is I want everyone to have their thoughts and feelings heard. And I'm excited about YouTube Comment Theater because I can bring them to life, not just in their words, but in really the spirit of how they're being said. And that's what we're going to do right now. Featuring our first ever conversation.
At our age, every season is bulking season.
Get ready for a season that is the same as every other season. I think it means PS will have almost no chance to make the CFP.
What are you smoking?
At UserCute 2PQ8 in 3 meters, I don't smoke and I'm always sober. Just analysis. Sometimes the truth hurts. Everybody thinks they will win the lottery. Almost no one does.
Sounds like someone is no fun. T. Frank.
No offense to this coach or the program. We hear this every year. Michigan ran us into the ground 2 years in a row, and we still can't run the ball on a consistent basis. It has been a problem since Barkley. Offense and defensive lines need to be 10,000% better or we'll continue to be below average. It would be nice to see us run the ball 16 straight times down a team's throat.
PSU is the same team without him. He offers no value added. Tired of using my tax dollars to pay this loser of a coach. The point is not who they hire. That's a different issue. They have the dollars to get someone to take them to the next level. The point is, why do you reward incompetence? He certainly has had adequate opportunities to win a meaningful game and has failed miserably time and time again. He makes absolutely stupid and incredulous comments like, I don't get involved calling plays. He's supposed to manage his coordinators, and when they screw up, step in, not to continually follow the script to disaster. He lacks the acumen to adapt and compensate for the dynamic and changing circumstances on the field. If he were a company commander, his men would all be massacred. He has clearly demonstrated he cannot do the job at a level to win a championship. The longer this poser stays, the less relevant PSU will become.
I think the most appropriate use of AI on the internet, YouTube Comment Theater. So if you want to be a part of YouTube Comment Theater, leave your honest, irrational thoughts and opinions, your rational thoughts and opinions. And I want to make sure that, like, this is not just dunking on haters, or it's about the conversation happening in the YouTube comments. Good, bad, indifferent, otherwise. That's what we're going to be doing maybe each week, depending on how good or bad the crop is. And I got to tell you, congratulations to everyone who made YouTube Comment Theater this week. There was a lot of talent left on the cutting room floor. So there's stiff competition. You guys ready for the mailbag?
I was like, taxpayer. Right. That's like, how dare the taxpayer dollar go to this guy?
Here's the problem, and this is really where the, you know, my production ability falls short, is I couldn't find the specific comment to put in juxtaposition of that one of somebody who expects James Franklin to be the omnipotent leader that knows the offense and defense to call, and then somebody immediately following saying this joker needs to get his hands off of the offense and needs to make sure that he is not calling plays, because literally the universe wants it both ways. They want to have him not have anything to do with the offense, and they also want him to be calling the right play at the right time to save the day. And that really is the spot where you find yourself if you're in James Franklin's shoes. We have questions, though. People who submitted them to the BWI mailbag, and we're going to get to those right now. Argraw is all he says. That guy isn't wrong. So the YouTube comment theater, again, here on the show. If you've got thoughts, we'll make sure we get them on the show. Michael Cecini back. He has a question this time, or this may be a statement. Wiley's production versus limited playing time has got to go statistically and be among the best. The guy makes plays when given the opportunity. Fitz, can you put that in context? I know you talked about it in the chat, but like, what's the context there of Keon Wiley's production in his snaps during games?
Absolutely true. I mean, there's truth to it. He's been like, when he gets in there, now granted, a lot of it's been, as I called in the chat, cleanup, garbage time, whatever you want to play. Although, you know, when Elsdon took his lumps, Wiley did step in and play a little bit more. So that's not, it hasn't all been garbage time, but he's been very good. It's just a matter of how do you gauge that? Like, how do you figure out if that's going to translate into, you know, being a second team or a guy that goes in every third series or something like that? I don't think there's a way to quantify it. But as I said in the chat, always been a really good football player. Like, whatever situation you put him in, whether it be a pass rusher off the edge, whether it be as a stand-up linebacker, he's always been really good at it. So those guys usually tend to play pretty well. So I'm excited to see his development. I'm excited to see what he can provide to this team. If you look back to his time at Imhotep, he was on a team with Anai White. Everybody was foaming over Anai White, but there was no question that Wiley was the better player. Like, there's questions about, you know, in 4 years, is Anai White a first round pick? You know, that, and those were kind of valid. And, you know, he hasn't really, you know, come, you know, that really hasn't come around for him. But at the time, Wiley was just a better player, and you could see it as plain as day. And that's kind of what you're looking at with a guy like, Keenan Wiley. So I'm excited to see how he does. I'm excited to see how everything that he's done up to this point translate. It's just, that's why I hesitate to jump too far into the Keon Wiley train, because, you know, it's been mostly in cleanup.
And Keon Wiley, the star of today's show, really, with the amount of time screen time we've been talking about him. But I do have the thing I'm curious about is, I agree with everything you just said, all the way back to what he was at high school, playing essentially kind of two positions and being an edge rusher. But the reason he's playing linebacker, a little bit smaller, what did you see from him yesterday? And is that a concern for you if he does see playing time? I think he was around 220. I don't have an update on where he is right now, but what did you see yesterday?
Let's see where he's at on the old list here. He's at 6'2", 220. Okay. So he's one of the skinnier linebackers out there. And I don't think that's going to change. That's just his general build and frame. I think that will come into play, you know, against playing the run and things like that. And it'd be interesting. Like, we saw him as we were leaving yesterday with the field backers, and that's an interesting sort of fit, because he has played in space before, not the traditional, like, he kind of played the way that Brandon Bell played the Sam, if that makes sense. Like, he's really good at rushing the passer, and if you can rush the passer from that position, that's a very valuable aspect to have to your defense. So I'm curious to see if he's a guy that just, you know, he's a plug and play guy at all three spots. I think they feel, get crap for this, but I think they feel okay about the middle, and they're kind of more focusing on the outside with him, whether it be the will of the Sam. It's going to be curious to see, but yeah, I agree. He's a very intriguing player that we don't know a ton about. And that's what spring football is all about.
Alex Light here in the chat. Another great question for Nate, who was with the offense. Andy Cole, Nicky seems a lot more animated, fiery, or whatever you want to say, than Mike Yurcich. Do you think players will respond well to that? What was your read of what Kolonicki, his personality yesterday?
No, I mean, Mike was crazy. Like, Mike was animated, fiery.
Yes, he was.
All that stuff. So the personality meshes, I think, right? Like, there's a clear contrast to me in a Marcus Hagans, right? Like, who's a little bit quieter, it seems, in terms of his instruction on the field. But look, like, don't get caught up in that stuff, right? It's I think that Kolonicki is demanding and exacting, again, based on 10 minutes of watching him in action. But that is the vibe, is yes, demanding, yes, exacting, yes, fiery, right? But that's kind of program wide, right?
It's also practice, not to say it's theater, but it's practice necessary. Part of the yelling is it's 25 yards away and you've got to be clear and concise with your communication. I'm sure they're not yelling in meetings the same way. Like, I just think that's part of being on a practice field for a football team.
It's a very funny visual, though. But it's about messaging, right? It's about how you procure your message to the people, and that's more important, I think, in those meetings off the field and things like that. And then, you know, we don't see that in the 10 minutes of viewing.
It's only practice one, right? Like, so I have very little doubt that there's some tone setting involved, you know, likely from the top to his coaching staff saying, hey, get into these guys, right? Yeah. One, set the tone, be urgent.
And that was something that James Franklin, I think, mentioned of there has to be some urgency. We got to understand it's day one, but there is some urgency in this spring window, which, as Nate just pointed out, that's what we saw the other day. Brad Moeller asked this question. If you had to pick a player on both sides of the ball who could make an impact this year that's not being talked about, who would it be and why do you think they will make an impact? Do you have a guy in mind? We talked a lot about Keon Wiley. Is that going to be your guy, Fitz, or is there somebody else you're thinking of?
Problem with the questions is that we talk about everybody because we talk about Penn State all year long. So it's so tough for me. So like I could say Andrew Rapelier and it's like, okay, but we've talked about him a lot. So Rapelier is an interesting one on defense. Zaki Wheatley, James Franklin shouted him out yesterday. We've been talking about Zaki Wheatley all offseason. I think he's going to be a very important part of this defense just because with the three safety look, it gives you a chance to move, I guess, the lion positions back, and it's on defense now. Move Jalen Reed into that sort of role that we kind of earmarked for him coming out, because when he played in high school, he was a rover. He just did everything. And we thought because of that, and because he played the run so well, that he could come out and be a guy that can play that sort of field linebacker / third safety position. So I think Zaki Wheatley is going to be a very important role because it's going to put other players in a position to succeed. And I will also say, going back to Jalen Reed, he might be the smartest guy on that defense, like in terms of like filling out and finding where everybody is supposed to be. So having him be able to freewheel while knowing what everybody else is doing is a very important aspect of that safety play. And that's really what Jair Brown did very well.
And I thought it was interesting. James Franklin mentioned who was going to be playing that lion role. And that really kind of clicks everything else into place, Fitz, because this is a conversation you and I had and we had here on the show of both of those safeties from last year can play that position. And who do they choose to put in that position? I think it's smart because it gives you the ability to play KJ Winston a little more independently. He can do a lot of different things from what I'm assuming is going to be the boundary safety. And then Zaki Wheatley, that center fielder, that field safety position, gives you the flexibility to use those guys to the best of their strengths. But it also gives us the picture of what I think we should expect from the defense outside of just knowing Jalen Reed.
Right.
This question here, going to the BWI message board, is from Psykim. What are the biggest challenges Abdul Carter faces switching to defensive end? Fitz, come back to you. What are your thoughts on this particular topic?
He's got to learn to pass rush technically. And that's like, he is really good at going after people, but there's a technical aspect of it that is a lot to pick up in a short period of time. So you're talking about rip moves. You're talking about swim moves. You're talking about spin moves. You're talking about push pull. You're talking about everything that he needs to process in order to, like, a lot of that is natural, but a lot of it is sort of an art form. And you talk
and how about how to have a plan, right? Yeah, how to combo those things together.
Exactly. When you're running, when you get a running start to go by an offensive tackle, there's a limited number of moves you can make because you're not really thinking about it. But when you line up against that guy, you probably have a set of what you need to get accomplished in order to get to the quarterback when you're at defensive end. So I think that's the biggest thing is you've got to get him with Deion Barnes. You got to get him with Torrence Brown. You've got to get his hands, Bruce Lombard. You got to get his hands where they need to be. And I think that's the biggest thing that he needs to make in terms of a jump. And I think he'd do it. Like it was funny. So back when I was covering his recruitment, like Penn State thought that he would be a defensive end because of his size, because of his athleticism, and because guys of that size don't stick at linebacker at Penn State. Maybe they do at Alabama, but not usually at Penn State. Then he comes in and he's able to stick at linebacker. Like he would be able to play there this year, but he's always had that. He's going to play at 260. Like he's going to continue to grow. He's got length. He's got burst. He's got everything that you want in a defensive end. It's just he's got 1 year to put it together, and it's going to be very interesting to see how he does that beyond his natural gifts, which are immense.
It's I've said this too many times, but I just think it's interesting that the move to defensive end, it was a bit of a cheat code. James Franklin talked about yesterday. You had basically two defensive ends playing linebacker with Kobe King and Abdul Carter, both at 250. So how does run defense change? You know, not just from a personnel or schematic standpoint, but from a personnel standpoint.
And to play off of that, when you're playing linebacker, you have to move backwards and you have to move forward. and you don't know, like, it depends on the play. It depends on the coverage. It depends on all that stuff. At defensive end, you have to move back a little bit, but you are forward focused. And yeah, that is where he's at his best. And that is why I think this move is going to work.
Nate, I'll come to you for this question, although we can have a conversation about it. This is from Scott L. Who of this group that came in together is most likely to be back for a senior season, their fourth year? Nick Singleton, Catron Allen, Abdul Carter, Denai Dennis Sutton, or Drew Aller? Which one of these guys, in your mind, in what might be a slightly unfair question for you, before we even got into fall camp of their junior season?
Yeah. I guess I'll... boy. I mean, well, look, here's the cynical take. The cynical take is if Drew doesn't have an NFL caliber season, will he play his next season in college football at Penn State? That's the conversation. I don't want to be that guy, though. So let's go with Denai. And just because Catron and Nick, I think, are probably going to do some big things this year. Drew might do some big things. I mean, honestly, they could all be gone. So
yeah,
they could all be gone, but also they could all be back. I don't know. I feel like... this is a
maybe all of them, maybe none of them, but also some of them. Gotcha.
But also, like, I'm really nailing down my feelings on this.
I mean, with
Nate
with
is Nick building Catron, a beautiful fence, and then he's going to sit on it.
With Nick and Catron, like, if you play as a freshman as a running back and you're good, like, there's guys that get thrust in that position that, you know, are going to level off, then you look at them as 3-year players. Like, because of, I mean, what are we watching in the NFL right now? Like, all these running backs that we think are young that are old, and just, it's crazy. Like, you got to get your window, you got to get in there and make your money there. So you got to look at those running backs if they're good as 3-year players, and that's kind of what they look at themselves as well. Denai would probably be the answer here, just because he has, I don't want to say produced the least, but like, he has been a guy that, you know, we know has the potential, we know he can do it. It's just a matter of, like, those roadblocks in front of him as Chop and as Adisa are out of the way. So now, does he make the most of it and go with that? And the other thing there is, the guys that leave early, or the guys that are no-brainers that leave early, are the freak athletes. Denai, as we talked about before, is not quite the freak athlete. He's a great player, great everything. It's just, he's not going to go out there and pop off a 4.4, whatever Chop just ran. I think that's what I look at. But yeah, I would say more likely all five than anything.
Yeah. It's from a running back perspective, even if they don't have standout seasons, is it better if you know you're an NFL running back? And I think it's fair to say both these guys can play in the NFL. Is it better to leave after your third year, no matter what, because of what we just talked about, Fitz?
Yes. I mean, unless the NIL money is so incredibly high, and a lot of those guys came back in college this year, like, and I don't know if it's a running back specific thing, but a lot of those guys came back in college this year because of NIL. I just don't know that your potential earnings are that as such to give up a year of your potential NFL career. But yes, I think so. And hey, man, we've seen how many seventh round running back, how many Alfred Morris's pop up and just kind of find their spot and go with it. And then that makes the front end guys expendable. And that's what we're seeing that's what we've seen for the last 8 years.
Yeah. And something, it's funny, I was having a conversation 6 years ago when somebody was telling me Saquon Barkley needs to come back for his junior season. And I was like, are you crazy? Here we are 6 years later and he finally hits free agency. So even if you're a good running back, getting to the second contract can take forever because there's just so many roadblocks to getting money at that position.
And then you get to the franchise tag and they just squeeze you as long as they can, you know, and that's kind of what we're looking at here. It's crazy. Like, good for Saquon. By the way, if you've got 10 minutes, James Franklin talked about Saquon yesterday for a big chunk of the press conference. So it's good to look back on that and get all that information out there. But happy for him. Happy for him to stick it to Tiki Barber as well. So, yeah, it's good times. Yeah. Good times.
I think there's one thing, even casual people who follow the NFC East know, is that Tiki Barber is kind of a giant poser. Like, he's somebody that I have heard very few good things about Tiki Barber as, like, an individual relationship guy. He asks this question. And this one, I think, is directed to me. With your latest article talking about Coach Kotelniki's run game at Kansas, do you see Bo Prabula having a larger role for that running quarterback threat next year? Yes, I absolutely see a specific package with Bo Prabula. I think one of the things they did last year with two running backs and some of the things that they did on the football field screams Bo Prabula. But like I said earlier in the show, after watching one practice and seeing some of the things that they were working on, I don't think it's limited Bo Prabula in terms of the full running game at Kansas. I thought initially, like, they've got to massage some of these things, and whatever Bo Prabula runs will be like something in the offense in general. And there will be specific times and positions and packages where he's on the football field. But I'm no longer thinking, well, Drew's not going to run those things. All the quarterbacks are going to run the running game from what we saw. And maybe, you know, that's just spring practice and getting used to doing these things. But I don't think you're putting your quarterbacks through running tackle breaking drills and things like that if you don't intend on establishing a mentality that they're going to run the football and not just Bo Prabula. Nate, let's ask you this question. Poncho 570. Would it shock you if Caleb Artis didn't lock down the now fifth spot on the defensive tackle rotation from Jordan Vandenberg, who moved on? If so, who do you think could claim it? That it's a pressure cooker, the top four all back. That fifth spot seems to be the place where somebody has an opportunity to play. Nate, what do you think of the defensive tackle rotation and your expectations for it?
I mean, there's some Xavier Gilliam buzz, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Sorry, Nate. That's my side of the field. I was texting here.
Thanks a lot, Fitz.
Yeah, he just kind of threw him right out there. I mean,
to ask basketball questions, so I wanted to make sure Nate was part of the conversation here.
Come on,
big game tonight. This is a good one because you look at what Jordan Vandenberg was like. He could have been the third defensive end defensive tackle this year, and then all of a sudden you get guys back that you didn't expect, and he's in the same spot. So no blame for Jordan he's going to end up at Georgia Tech. We'll see if he plays right away or not. But that's like one of those things. It's just like, hey, if you're the fifth guy, that's great, but they're hoping not to have a fifth guy like that. If that makes sense, because you've got those four guys in front of him and you're going to figure out starters. You're going to figure out with Ellie's Beeman, Durant and Kazai Izzard, like those guys are pretty good. Like, and they should be. Once again, they've been reliable too. Like they haven't been outside of some suspensions and stuff. They've been reliable. Kind of tramples my argument there. But Caleb Artis is
unreliable.
So can I just ask you that part of it? I'm thinking specifically of Zane Durant in his third season and Kazai Izzard this year. I feel like there's more to give. Like they were good last year, but they're still room for improvement for this group. Do you agree with that, or do you think that we've seen kind of the where these guys are in their talent level?
Oh, absolutely there's improvement there. Like Zane is, I think, going to be one of the better defensive tackles in the Big Ten. Izzard was a guy that we expected to be the starter, and then, you know, Devon Ellis comes back, Hakeem Beeman comes back. Those guys have proven what they're liable. Now 2025, Deion Barnes is gonna he's got some stuff ahead of him there. That's a conversation for another day. But Caleb Artis, I don't know about Davon Townley, man. He just hasn't clicked since he's been, moved to defensive tackle. Tyreek Blanding is interesting because you hear some good things. He's just not the biggest guy in the world. Probably needs another year at that. And then, as Nate mentioned, Xavier Gilliam's getting a lot of buzz. Like, that's a guy they like, and they've gotten him big enough where he can compete right now. Is that a sense where he plays more than four games? I don't know. I have a tough time seeing that, but there's a lot to like there. And then you balance that with getting these guys ready. I think Artis would have the leg up, you would think. They expected him to maybe come on last year, late in the year, but number one, they didn't need him. Like that group stayed abnormally healthy, knock on wood. They didn't need him, and he just wasn't at the level of those guys. So I think there's a clear breaking point between four and then everybody else there.
Yeah, and depending on how they decide to play that particular position opens the opportunity for whomever. Xavier Gilliam, 294, 6'2". We've talked about him. Clearly a more of a three technique. Artis, 320, 315, in that like more of a nose tackle role. How do they decide to play things is going to determine if this fifth spot opens with anything you might mention from either usage patterns for veteran guys or somebody gets nicked up. That's going to be a large determining factor on some of these depth guys.
And how many downs do you need them? Like Penn State's run defense pretty good last year. I know the YouTube theater talked about Michigan running the ball down the throat. mean, not really. Like, they ran the ball a lot, but it was very different than you remember. PTSD there. But you look at Abdul Carter. Can he play that role where he lines up over the center on third downs? Can you move Denai in? Can you move Amin Van over in? You just have so much a defensive end that gives you a pass rush, and nothing against these defensive tackles. Like, I think they're good, but they don't give you as much outside of Zane Durant as with a pass rush. So
yeah,
very interesting to see how Barnes, Torrence Brown, Tom Allen, they combine to figure out the best pieces for, you know, third and long. And that was an issue last year. Not so much the third and long couldn't get to the quarterback, but third and long, the teams ran it. That's where the teams ran it down their throat last year. And that was unbelievable to watch and just mind-blowing when you talk about how good that defense was.
So we're here at the end of the show. I always want to give these guys an opportunity to promote their work over at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com. Another last nugget to entice you to sign up for the site. Nate, what's going on with you today and the rest of the week?
Say basketball is in the Big Ten tournament. They play Michigan tonight at 9 o'clock in Minneapolis. I will be watching from the comfort of my couch, but kind of putting a bow on this season. There's some potential postseason implications, but you know, they very clearly need to go on a little bit of a run Wednesday, Thursday, probably Friday too, for the NIT to come into play. But you know, some level of intrigue given the way that the season ended for these guys.
Seems like a good draw though, right?
It's a great draw. It says, I mean, you know, you've got a Michigan team that is just really bad, an Indiana team that Penn State has beaten twice, and then Nebraska, which has not played well outside of its home arena. So, right, there's as opposed to the potential outcome of being the 8 seed where they would have played the 1 seed after the 8-9 game, right? It's pretty much as good as they could have asked for coming into this thing.
Fitz, what do you got going on this week?
I've got, first off, I'll pump up Ryan Snyder's work. Big recruiting week. They'll have visitors Tuesdays, Thursdays, big one on Friday, actually, and then Saturdays as well. So it's a very busy recruiting time. These guys get on campus. Malik Washington was here yesterday, among some others. So check out his coverage. Check out our recruiting coverage. It's a busier time of year than you would think, and Penn State's right back in the swing of things here. Working right now on my 10 under the microscope for spring ball. Always one of my favorite pieces to do for spring ball, because it's talking whether it's starters, whether it's you know, guys down the bench, the very interesting storylines that maybe we don't talk about as much. So I'm putting that together at some point. Can't say when it's going to be out, but it's at least up here. So check out the site, check out BlueWhiteIllustrated.com. There's a lot of stuff going on right now.
Yeah, and we'll be back tomorrow with another live show back-to-back. Fitz and I are doing double duty today because Thursday is the recruiting show. So get a little bit more information, context, and conversation about Penn State recruiting and what Fitz just said. All of that stuff of a very busy time of year for Penn State recruiting. Last thing I've got is I'm excited for this. My new best friend, Lana Tengwall, and I are going to be collaborating on a film room. We're going to be sitting down and watching Olu Fashanu and what makes him so special, coming from the guy who lined up next to him for 2 years. So make sure you check that out when it comes out at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com. Great reason to sign up, as always, from these guys. We will be back, as I said, tomorrow. But don't forget to subscribe to BlueWhiteIllustrated.com. Tell your friends, shake them, and say, hey, football's already started. Don't show up in April. Show up now, get all the information, and be here with us as we talk Penn State football on the Blue White Illustrated YouTube channel, BlueWhiteIllustrated.com. We'll talk to you.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.